Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. Progress is being made in reliable access to safe drinking water for the world's poor, but access to basic sanitation facilities is lagging behind.
2 people out of every 5 on Earth lack basic sanitation facilities. I spoke with Jenna Davis, an assistant professor of civil and environmental engineering at Stanford University's Institute for the Environment. She worked on water and sanitation problems with people in over 12 countries of the developing world. She talked with me about progress made and some examples of what's working and why. Jenna, thanks again for taking this time out, and welcome to Earth and Sky. Could you tell me a little bit about some of the work that you're doing out at Stanford?
Sure. Our work here at Stanford is actually quite multidisciplinary. I can give you a few examples of the sorts of things we look at. We're broadly interested in 2 things. One is increasing the rate of expansion of access to improved water supply and sanitation services by households in low and middle income countries. And then on the flip side, once we have those services installed, we're very concerned about finding effective strategies to keep those systems delivering safe, affordable, reliable services in the long run. That is the sustainability question.
Right. And some of the numbers that you come across as you learn more about these things are pretty startling. More than 1 billion people around the world don't have access to safe drinking water. Also, more than 2.5 billion people don't have access to basic sanitation facilities.
You're correct. About 1.2 billion people lack access to what we call improved water supply services, which means simply that you have access to a level of service or technology that is thought to deliver, on average, safe water. And 2.6 billion people lack access to even the most basic form of sanitation. And in the developing world, that comes out to almost 1 out of every 2 people on the sanitation side. So when you think about the numbers and the progress, I think a couple of things bear mention. The Millennium Development Goal is to cut in half the proportion of people without access to services in 2015, using 1990 as the baseline. And if you look at progress since 1990, you see a slow but steady decline in the percentage unserved for water supply. So we continue to make good progress, and I think that that target is well within reach. The sanitation story is rather different. Because of population growth and because of the relative lack of progress on sanitation, over the decades, sort of 70s, 80s, 90s, up to 2000, we barely kept pace against population growth. That is, we haven't made much of a dent at all in decreasing the percentage of people that don't have access to basic sanitation. And the current estimates by the Joint Monitoring Program, which is the official agency comprised of UNICEF and World Health Organization that keeps track of these records, that monitors this progress, they're estimating that if current trends continue, we're going to miss that sanitation target in 2015, not by a little, but by 500 million people. So the news is rather good on the water side. It looks like we're well within reach of the target for most countries. But on sanitation, not so good.
What are some of the things that people are doing in developing countries that is working?
There's actually a lot of good news. We've learned an awful lot in the past several decades. And in particular, there was, I think, early on, an awful lot of emphasis on technology development, which is certainly important, but is only part of the story. What we've learned over the past couple of decades is that creating a good match between the kinds of services that we're offering to households in the developing world and what their felt needs and preferences are is a key, both to expanding the rate of access for services and also in keeping those services running. So just as an example, our group has recently finished a piece of work in which we went back to rural communities in Bolivia and in Ghana and in Peru, sort of 5 to 7 years after their improved water systems had been installed. And whereas broadly rural water supply has had a real problem with sustainability, we found in these communities over 90% of the systems were still functioning 5 to 7 years later. This is a tremendous success story. We're very excited about it, and it has to do with the way that planning happened. Planning involved community members right from the beginning, understanding what their needs and preferences were for different levels of service, involved them in decision-making, and also, frankly, required them to show a commitment to the project through both cash and labor contributions. And the result, sort of several years down the road, is really positive. I also think it's important to recognize on the sanitation side that a lot of the really successful programs that we're hearing about now involve very simple technologies and sometimes even just behavior change or motivation. So there are a lot of programs now focused on very simple latrines or on the promotion of hand washing or just shifting the culture of taboo around discussing defecation and urination so that communities can come together and deal with these issues in a way that they haven't before. So I think important messages here are technology is important but only a small part of the overall solution, which also requires understanding how communities think about, feel about water, sanitation, health, and hygiene and what they need, and also working on the financing side and the institutions and policy side.
Now, this initiative that you were talking about, this is the S-Cubed initiative, and what I've read described as the poop group.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I came across in looking at your research had to do with this concept of trying to get the waste out as quickly as possible out of the household, and how that might not always be the right thing to do.
Well, that's true. In the industrialized world, we have a model of waterborne sewage that comes from a very particular history. You have to remember that early on, we did not have a germ theory of disease. We had a miasma theory of disease. So we didn't understand that contact with fecal matter was what could make us ill. We thought that it was the gas, the noxious gas and the smell, that was what was communicating disease. So our response to this, flushing large volumes of water, was something we started early and we sort of locked ourselves into. And we need to think critically about where in the developing world this kind of solution makes sense and is the appropriate thing to do, and where there are other alternatives that might be better suited to still reaching those health goals but are more cost-effective, they use less water, and they're still entirely appropriate and culturally accepted.
Some countries that are doing well as far as making progress towards improving having access to clean water and sanitation for their citizens, I believe that one country that you've talked about is Myanmar?
Yes. Let's talk about Bangladesh, which is not Myanmar, but let's talk about Bangladesh for a moment. Bangladesh is one of the poorest countries in the world and is a really interesting story from the sanitation perspective. Even just a decade ago, Bangladesh had one of the lowest levels of coverage for its rural population with respect to sanitation. So we're talking about access to even the most basic form of sanitation, like an improved latrine. And the country today is not only on target to meet that Millennium Development Goal for sanitation, but they're going to do better than that, and they're probably going to do it several years before the 2015 target. And there is a confluence of factors here that come into Bangladesh's success. It is a strong NGO community that is committed to this issue. It is a very supportive national policy framework, and it's an innovation in the way sanitation has been addressed that is very low-tech or appropriate tech and very effective. So there is an approach used in Bangladesh called total sanitation, and it was pioneered by an NGO in that country in the late 1990s, but has now been picked up by many, many organizations. And it's a very behavior-oriented approach that just starts by going into a community where open defecation is the norm for sanitation. That is, the majority of people are not using improved sanitation facilities. And getting people to walk around the community, to literally walk up and find excreta on the ground, and start talking about all of the resultant issues. So identifying defecation zones, understanding why people are making the choices that they're making, and hopefully to ignite a sense of collective disgust and motivation to do something differently. And once that sort of motivation has been created within a community, then the NGO works with the community to think about strategies to move forward in a way that is appropriate given the financial means, the priorities and preferences of household members.
All right. You've described these sanitation issues as the poor cousin to water access. Are there some people who are championing this cause? I came across something in the papers about how the musical band The Police just got together, reformed, and they're donating the proceeds of their concerts to a water organization, water access organization. Are there some champions out there for world sanitation?
That's a great question. There are a lot of wonderful and committed soldiers out there working on the sanitation issue. A couple that come to mind are the Water Supply and Sanitation Collaborative Council, which really has made it a priority to bring this issue onto the international agenda. And then at the subnational level, there are a couple of organizations like Sulab International in India that have been developing and refining very successful models that target low-income communities for sanitation improvements. So there are a lot of people who are working on this issue. But just as you say, there are not these international stars and celebrities, at least that I see, stepping up to champion the sanitation issue as many have championed the water issue. And this is reflective of a broader sort of demotion of sanitation to water, right down, by the way, to the household level. So this this poor cousin aspect for sanitation that we see, it's pretty much at all levels. And if you think about it at a very personal level, if you were a very poor person and could invest only in one thing, water supply for your family or sanitation for your family, the choice is rather obvious. So that trade-off gets translated from the household level right up to the community and beyond. So it would be nice to have some champions, but we're focused really at understanding what are some of the barriers at these different levels to making better progress for sanitation. And one of them, by the way, is just this issue of talking about it. It's very easy for champions to get up and talk about improving access to water supply. Everyone's interested in it, and it's an important issue. But you can imagine it's a little bit more uncomfortable to get up and talk about improving access to places for people to defecate and urinate. It's a, you know, there's a bit of a stigma there, a bit of a taboo, and we have this collective sense that if we don't talk about it, maybe the problem will go away. In the course of my lifetime, I've seen great progress in shifting mindsets about the discussion of other so-called sensitive topics, you know, such as HIV/AIDS, and even when I was younger, cancer. That was something that you didn't quite talk about in an elevated voice, and we've managed to overcome the sensitivities around those issues quite nicely so that we can address them comprehensively and well as a community. But, you know, communities and even families around the world in places where we are working, they don't like to talk about excreta. You know, even in classes that I teach here at Stanford, the first few weeks of the term have an awful lot to do with getting people in the room comfortable talking about defecation and urination and excreta management, etc.
Jenna, thank you very much for taking this time out to speak with me, and I really appreciate it. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the public today or the listeners of Earth and Sky?
Yes. If you don't mind, I'd like to make one more intervention. I want to make sure to say that there's often a presumption that households in developing countries just don't understand the importance of sanitation, the importance of fecal contamination to illness. And so what we really need to do is launch education campaigns so that families will understand and be motivated to improve their sanitation services. And this is certainly true in some cases, but I should say that in the places where we're working, the obstacles really lie elsewhere, and they can be very simple innovations. Families often fully understand the value for sanitation, but simply can't afford improvements, at least in the way the financing works. So as one example, if a family wants to build a latrine, they understand and they want to build a latrine. They face a large upfront cost, and that cost can be, you know, the equivalent of several weeks' worth of their income. If you or I wanted to make that kind of a purchase, what we call, you know, a bulky purchase, not necessarily a latrine, but some other improvement to our house or a car or something of that nature, we would probably take out a loan. And that's just not an option for poor families with no collateral in low and middle income countries. So one of the things that our group is looking at in partnership with several other organizations here in the U.S. and in India is the potential for simple microcredit lending to households so that they can amortize the costs of these important improvements over time, right? So we don't take it for granted that households in poor countries don't understand these linkages. We think, in fact, that they do. And so a lot of our work is trying to figure out what are the barriers that are preventing households from acting on that understanding.
That was global water and sanitation expert Jenna Davis of Stanford University. This has been an Earth and Sky presentation.
We're at earthsky.org.